We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Representative Chippendale, your district encompasses parts of Foster, Coventry, and Gloucester. Those were communities where Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton decisively last year. What's your sense of how the president's support is holding up among the voters who backed him in those communities?
It's holding up fairly strong. In my conversation with folks, constituents, they are very much supportive of his agenda. Certainly, there are some folks who've been turned off by some of the recent personality things, I guess you could say, and the war with the media. But again, they're so strongly anti-establishment, his supporters, that I don't think his behavior is hurting him with those folks. They want someone who's going to go down there and throw the furniture around and raise holy heck and change things and turn everything upside down, because the way they see it, and I don't disagree 100%, is that the Washington political machine is broken. You need someone to go in there and rip it apart so it can be rebuilt the proper way. That's what I think people are expecting and hoping from Donald Trump.
Well, speaking of political machines, let's talk about the Rhode Island General Assembly. It seems like Groundhog Day here in Rhode Island, where Republicans have struggled for a long time to increase their numbers. With an election year coming up in 2018, what do you think the party needs to do differently to get more Republicans elected to the legislature?
Well, I think it's, again, the basics, you know, the ground game that we talked about earlier, the GOTV efforts, all of those things that are integral to a good, effective campaign. I think that there's some of that lacking with certain candidacies among Republicans, and a lot of it has to do with, maybe we don't have a tremendous number of people running out to help volunteer for our campaigns. And I'll say it, we didn't get a lot of people jobs, so they don't feel obliged to come help us on our campaigns, and I put it out there.
All right, let's go to Scott.
What kind of a PSOX deal, state subsidy deal, could you support and that you think you could sell to your voters, a lot of whom I know out in the rural parts of the state are not real supporters of government interference in the private market?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you guys know, I'm a huge PSOX fan, grew up in the stadium, love it. I'd hate to see it leave. However, my constituents are looking at this from a purely fiscal perspective. They are still hurt and peeling the scab off of RISDIC, of 38 Studios, of you name it. They do not trust when this state government decides to dole out taxpayer money for such ventures.
Is there any deal you could support that would involve a subsidy?
You know, I can't say right now. I'd have to see it. But I don't think that my constituency would favor me supporting any deal that state money goes to. And I represent those folks. And I would have to agree that it's not a good thing to have such a heavy investment on the public side.
We had one of your House colleagues here last week, Representative Teresa Tansey, a progressive, and she's been the driving force behind a bill expected to be approved during a special session next month. It's meant to decrease access to guns for people who are involved in domestic violence. You're known as a strong gun rights supporter.
Yes.
What is your view of that bill?
Well, I don't think the bill is going to have the impact that is intended. Certainly no one is going to state that domestic abusers should be protected on any level, and certainly not me. You'll never hear that. However, I don't believe the bill as it was structured in the House. The Senate version was a little bit better. I don't even believe that it would stand a constitutional challenge just because of the way it was crafted. It eliminated due process. It eliminated a lot of Fourth Amendment rights that we enjoy. It didn't really, in my opinion, go to the offenders. It was a broad, wide net, hoping to catch one or two offenders, along with the thousands of other innocent people who did nothing.
What kind of measure would you support that would keep guns out of the hands of domestic abusers?
My position always has been and always will be that we need to enforce the laws that we have on the books. This state does an absolutely horrendous job enforcing firearm laws. And I don't want to spout the same statistics I always do, because they're from 2012. But I assume it hasn't changed much. Up to 78% of every firearm charge in the city of Providence in 2013, I think it was either dropped or completely just pled out. We need to be serious. If you commit a crime with a firearm, you will be punished. That's a message that we need to make very clear to people, and I believe that will have an effect.
We're talking here with State Rep Michael Chippindale, and last year, Rep, you were on the short side of a vote to become the new Republican leader in the Rhode Island House. Representative Patricia Morgan won that race, and subsequently she removed you from the House Oversight Committee. What kind of job do you think she's doing as the Republican leader in the House?
She's done a lot of things in the office that I think are positive as far as raising the profile of our caucus. Of course, her the veracity with which she goes after these issues that are so important to people is endearing to me and so many other people, too, because she's so passionate about this. I think that has certainly been unifying for the Republicans in the state.
One of the things we've seen again lately, which is engage the public, our electricity rates. We just saw this huge national grid kerfuffle, and I'm wondering, what can be done to try to stabilize electricity rates? It's a complicated issue, I know, but what would you do?
It's real complicated, but you know, I'm going to be real simple about it because I'm a kind of simple guy. I think we need to address our mandates regarding renewable energy. I think that we have, while laudable, we have sought to too quickly increase the percentage in our portfolio of energy that comes from renewable sources. So, in other words, we're increasing the demand.
You slow that down a bit? Is that what you do?
I think we need to roll it back and then roll it out more slowly. I think we're just doing it too aggressively. There's not enough supply, Scott, that will fit what we're calling for in our energy portfolio. So when you have a high demand and not enough supply, naturally, inflation occurs. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing 32 to 37 cents a kilowatt hour from renewables, and we're seeing 7 cents to 9 cents from natural gas. So you have folks saying, we don't want any new power plants. And then you have folks say, we don't want any windmills and we don't want any solar. Well, you can't have it both. You have to give in at some point. If you want affordable electricity, it's going to have to remain largely fossil fuels until renewables become more mainstream, more affordable, and more ubiquitous.
Who do you like in the Republican primary battle between State Rep Bobby Nardalillo and former State Supreme Court Justice Robert Flanders? They're running to take on Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse next year.
Well, I think they're both great candidates. I think getting out there, having a Republican primary for an office like that is a good thing. It's an opportunity for Republicans to have a choice, which a lot of times we don't. So I think it'll give folks the ability to see these two very different personalities. People are going to gravitate towards Bobby Nardalillo. People are going to gravitate towards Bob Flanders' experience. So I think there's going to be a fair split there. At the end of the day, I would have to say Flanders is going to pull it off.
Without belaboring the issue, why'd you vote against the budget? What were your main objections to the budget that did finally, after a big, big fandango, clear the legislature?
Yeah, you know, I think that the way that this budget was crafted and the scooping that occurred, which you know what scooping is, taking money out of other areas and hoping it gets filled with other stuff,
right,
in order to support a political promise that the speaker made to eliminate the car tax, completely, in my opinion, destroyed the honesty of a good budget process, because it was all about making sure we can fund this campaign promise. And I think that's a bad way to govern. I think that's a bad way to lead. I think that the standalone legislation the Senate passed to kind of monitor the rollback on the car tax is prudent. I think it's actually a prudent approach to do. Look at it. If we have to pull back, we have to pull back when it's, you know, before it's too late. I think that's smart, but yes, I do believe that the strain, the scooping, and the diversion of funds is going to put such a strain on certain areas. We cut, there were considerable cuts to the human services budget. We cannot continue to beat up the same segments of the population that are taken care of by our budget and expect things to continue to be positive. It's going to catch up to us, and I believe it's going to do it sooner than later after this budget.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And from Foster, Republican State Rep. Michael Chippindale.
Thank you, gentlemen.